And it's great to be back with Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur, of course, joins us on a Monday morning, and we talk about food, glorious food. Good morning, Arthur.
Soup, glorious soup.
It's funny you say that. I made some soup this weekend.
Let me just say that it's, you know, it's cold.
Yeah.
So people think about soup. But, in fact, just the other day, a friend of mine said, oh, my wife is aching to have soup. I said, well, so make a pot of soup. He said, oh, she spent several days reading your cookbook. I wrote a soup book called Soup Supper. It happens to be my best-selling cookbook. I actually got a royalty this year. I think it was like $87. Well, listen, it used to be, I don't know what the cookbook publishing world is like now, but it used to be if your book earned out, which means you earned back the advance, the modest advance that they gave you to write the book, that was considered an accomplishment and earned out. So I'm just looking at this is 1994. So this book is 27 years old, and it's still in print. That's an accomplishment unto itself. I'm looking at the back of the book. You know, praise for Arthur Schwartz comes from Alice Waters. I have to say, I am on Alice's New Year's card list. It's the list from Chez Panisse, her original and only restaurant, which has been, I don't know, 40 years maybe. Anyway, this year, I'm sure this was not intentional, but Alice's card, the Chez Panisse New Year card, is a bunch of, it's a nice card, colorful, I'm sure what they meant to be Christmas ornaments, sort of stylized Christmas ornaments, balls of different colors, shiny balls. And what it really ends up looking like is the COVID virus with all these bumps on it, and just in different colors, you know. And not usually they're depicted red because, you know, it's dangerous. Anyway, so they got Alice Waters praise and other people, including dead people. So this book has been around a long time. And my friend's wife, who was reading it to decide for 2 weeks or whatever it was, what she was going to cook from it, inspired me to read some of it myself. And I really want to make, and I'm going to do this today because I have everything in the house that I need, except a piece of meat. I'm going to make mushroom barley soup. Now, I have several mushroom barley soups in my computer, and there are at least two, if not three, here in this book. It is something I like a lot, as you can see. My father's favorite soup was mushroom barley soup, and my mother and grandmother both made the same mushroom barley soup, which is to say they would buy that package of Goodman's or Manischewitz. There are probably several companies. Maybe there were, but who knows. And in those packets was all the things you needed, except a piece of meat, to make the mushroom barley soup. And it was a thick soup. My father always said, I like thick soup. That was one of his lines. And this thick soup contains not just barley, but also split peas, lima beans. When early in my career, I decided that this soup that my mother and grandmother made would be better if I made it with real chicken broth instead of the packet of flavoring, seasoning, basically, you know, powdered chicken bouillon that came with the packet of other things. And, of course, my grandmother and my mother would both add their own fresh vegetables and a piece of flanken, which is the which is short ribs, but cut across the, I've told this a zillion million times, It's short ribs cut across the bones. And as I mentioned just a few weeks ago, it's a hard thing to find these days, and it's also expensive. You can definitely use some chuck or some other piece of meat that isn't quite... It became trendy, short ribs and flanken. So it got expensive. So you don't have to use a fancy meat for this. It's flavoring meat. In fact, you could just use soup bones with the meat clinging to them. Or, as I've been buying, neck bones, which are very inexpensive and look like it's a lot of bone, but in the end there's quite a lot of meat there too. Very good for soup. Anyway, I dissected this packet of seasoning stuff, and I came up with these proportions. 1 1/4 cups of barley mixed with 1/2 cup of either green or yellow, or if you want both, it's a mucky color, but it doesn't matter in this case. 1/2 cup of split peas, green or yellow, doesn't matter. 1/4 cup of dried baby lima beans, and that is your basic bean and barley mixture. You also need the best dried mushrooms you can find. Now, in my grandmother and Mother's Day, you could actually go to the supermarket and get pretty good dried mushrooms in a little container. Nowadays, these are terrible. I have bought them fairly recently just to see what that was like these days, and they're terrible. They're basically white mushrooms from China, no less, dried, and they have no flavor. So forget those. If you can get good porcini, if you can afford good porcini, they are the right mushroom to use. Now, why is mushroom barley soup so popular among Jews? This is a Polish, Ukrainian, we now say Belarus, Belarusian. My great-grandparents were from Belarus, what is now Belarus. It's from that part of the Polish. It's from that part of the world. And the mushrooms, I know this because I witnessed it myself, are free food. They're wild mushrooms. You go to the woods, you pick mushrooms. You've got to know what you're doing. I witnessed this myself. In 1988, I went to the Soviet Union where they on a food trip when there was no food in the Soviet Union to speak of. And we went to an open market. We went to more than one open market where people were allowed to sell what little things they grew in their garden. Basically, that was it. They weren't really farmers' markets. What these markets always had, if nothing else, and sometimes they had nothing else, were dried mushrooms. I even brought back from... where did I buy these? I guess in Lithuania. I bought at a market necklaces of dried porcini. Well, they were dried mushrooms. They are the same boletus as porcini, and they were in beautiful graduated necklaces, meaning the big ones were at the bottom of the necklace, and then it graduated to smaller and smaller and smaller. I, by the way, kept these intact for years until we finally consumed them. They were great, even after several years of storage, they were still great mushrooms. So, but good, you know, Italian porcini worked very well. If you can find Polish black mushrooms, the same thing, use those, but I don't think you're going to find them. So that's the mushroom in mushroom barley soup. Now, the other vegetables are your basic carrot, onion, celery, but used in a different way than you would for, you know, Italian soup, let's say. I'm looking at my recipe here because I don't want to screw it up here. This is, by the way, because I've made this all my life, but you would think I could know it by heart, but I haven't made it in a while. So what I do is I saute the onions. My grandmother would not have done that. She would have just thrown them in the pot. But I do saute in about 3-4 tablespoons of oil a couple of medium onions. This is a couple of cups of chopped onions. I like to finely chop by hand. If you have to do it in the food processor, go ahead, but don't. And then after they're getting tender and actually beginning to brown a little bit, we always like a little bit of a browning when you're making something Eastern European. It's one of the main flavors of Eastern Europe is browned onions, caramelized onions. You're going to add the rest of your ingredients, which would be six. This makes a lot of soup, by the way, and this, by the way, freezes perfectly. So it's a good thing to make in quantity, especially on a cold day like today. You get it simmered for a while, and it'll steam up your kitchen. I need humidity in my kitchen. It's very dry here. So 6 quarts of water. And what I do is I grate directly into the pot 3 medium carrots, about 2 cups of grated carrot, and I grate it directly into the pot, trying to keep the carrot perpendicular to the grater so that I get short strands of carrot. And then I put in my meat. Now, my recipe in soup suppers calls for a lot of meat, but you really, 1 pound of meat would be enough. If you really want a dish with a lot of meat in it at the end, then 1.5 pounds of meat. If you get some soup bones, great, throw those in the pot. And then your bean and barley mixture. Again, I'll repeat that. 1.25 cups of barley, 1/2 cup of split peas, 1/4 cup of baby lima beans. Now you're going to add your salt and pepper later, okay? And, of course, the mushrooms. I use 1/2 ounce. That's being a little bit stingy for such a large pot of soup, but they are strong flavored, and they are expensive. If you can afford more and you also like more, you can add more. But 1/2 ounce is enough to give it, of dried good porcini, is enough to give it a good flavor. Now, you want to cook this for hours, literally an hour, I would say 2 hours. In the end, the mushrooms will have flavored the soup. The split peas will have totally disintegrated. The meat will be tender. And what I do is I don't like to eat this right out of the pot. Let it sit for at least several, you make it in the morning and let it sit for several hours until you're ready to serve it later, or refrigerate it and eat it the next day. You can keep it refrigerated for quite a while, and as I said, it freezes well, too. But of course, you're going to add salt and pepper after, an hour. And it takes quite a lot of salt. I would add as much as a couple tablespoons of salt. Remember, you're going to have a huge amount of soup here. You haven't added any broth. Now, this is the old-fashioned Eastern European, and I have to add, even Southern Italian way of making soup without broth. You add a piece of chicken, you add a piece of meat, could be pork actually, if you're a Southern Italian, not if you're Jewish, of course. if you're Lithuanian, you might use pork. In fact, you likely would use pork. And that's it. That's the flavoring in the soup. You don't have to make broth separately, and then blah, blah. Now, another soup that this is the one I'm probably going to make to eat today, is a sauerkraut soup, literally. Now, years ago, I haven't checked on this lately, and given that a lot of things have disappeared during the pandemic, there used to be, all around the city of New York, in Brooklyn and Manhattan in particular, what I used to call Polish coffee shops. These they served American diner / coffee shop food like hamburgers and egg salad sandwiches and tuna sandwiches, but they also served Polish specialties, including, of course, many, many ways of eating kielbasa. My favorite thing in these restaurants, after soup, were the pierogi, because I grew up eating fried pierogi. It was a very common food in Jewish culture. And we didn't say, we had fried pierogi and boiled pierogi, and usually you ate them in a dairy restaurant, so they were filled with cheese or potato and onion, but they were not filled with any meat. So anyway, these coffee shops were known for their soups. Now they used the last one that I know of in Brooklyn was Teresa's on Montague Street in Brooklyn Heights. And I think they did close maybe even before the pandemic. But they made the sauerkraut soup, and they also made a version of, because it is a Polish thing, mushroom barley soup, but with cream in it. So that was not the way I grew up eating mushroom barley soup. But the sauerkraut soup, I didn't know about this sauerkraut soup until I was an adult. And I, in the 70s, this was like the best cheap meal you could get in New York City, was going to one of these, I'm trying to think of the names of the other places, but Christine's, that was a big one, Christine's, Christine's White Borscht was famous, and that was one of the ways you ate kielbasa, floating in this soup, because it was, although based on chicken, it always had kielbasa in it. And so here's what, this recipe is very easy. You're going to make your own chicken broth, however. You're going to start the soup by sort of making the chicken broth. But it is sauerkraut soup, so you got to make your sauerkraut broth. So in a saucepan, 3-quart saucepan, bring about a quarter of water to a boil, 4 cups of water, and add a couple pounds of sauerkraut. Now, I never buy canned sauerkraut anymore. I mean, I did 40 years ago, but you can buy in a bag almost, I would say, everywhere. You can buy very good fresh sauerkraut. So 2 bags is usually, it's usually a pound per bag. So strain the sauerkraut and add it to the water, and simmer it for half an hour. And now strain again, but this time you're going to reserve the broth, and you should have about 5 cups of sauerkraut broth. Now, the sauerkraut's not going to have any flavor at all to speak of, so you can throw that away. But you have this precious 5 cups of sauerkraut broth. Now, I said you have to start by making a chicken broth, and in another saucepan, you're going to take, I don't make a real full-blown chicken broth, but let's say 3 chicken legs, or maybe 2 chicken thighs. That's all you need. If you're somebody like me, who, when they buy whole chickens, saves the neck and wing tips, and you can use those too. Anyway, so make a little chicken broth by putting a couple pieces of chicken with a couple of bay leaves, and you know a nice amount of celery. I mean, 3 or 4 ribs of celery, a couple of carrots. If you don't have a leek or two, then which I never do, use an onion cut in half. And an essential spice in this, to make it taste really Polish, I guess, is 2 full teaspoons of whole allspice. You know, a little dried berries of allspice. Now, allspice tastes like allspice. It tastes like a warm spice, a combination, I guess you would say, of cinnamon, nutmeg, mace, all those allspice. And then you're going to need a couple quarts of water. So let that simmer at least for an hour and a half. It's a nice chicken broth. It'll smell up your kitchen really good. And so now you have a quart of chicken broth and 5 cups of sauerkraut broth, and you're going to combine them, reseason it. You're probably going to need some salt and pepper. And now this is an herb that I do keep in the house. And just the other day when I was cleaning out my spice cabinet, I decided, oh, I should probably check this. Is it still viable? Marjoram, dried marjoram. You could say marjoram is sort of a mild version of oregano. I love it. And my jar is still viable, but even though my recipe calls for 2 teaspoons, I'm going to use 2 rounded teaspoons because it's a little less strong than I would like it. And that's it. That is your soup. It is delicious now, but you want to thicken it. So you thicken it with a slurry of cornstarch. Take about 4 teaspoons of cornstarch and dissolve it, beat it with a fork, into a cup of heavy cream, and pour that into your broths, and that will thicken it and cream it up. And I serve this with heavy garnish, let's say, because it's a brothy soup, but and you need some substance. So take a kielbasa. If you don't have kielbasa, hot dogs will actually do, but I would cut them on the bias so that you get nice looking slices, not little, you know, penny sized slices. A kielbasa, though, you don't have to do that. And you need about a half a pound for this amount of soup. I also like a boiled potato in my bowl of soup. This is enough for six people. So if you take six little potatoes and boil them, maybe a half of a hard-boiled egg in each bowl is really good. And it's very, very comforting. I know it doesn't sound like much, but it's just chicken broth and sauerkraut broth. So anyway, soup today. But so a little notes of the week.
Yeah, you know,
last week I talked about undervalued vegetables, meaning mainly cucumber and celery. I thought about this week, because I value this highly, but I see that they don't sell very well. Endive. And I talk about endive before, but I do mainly three things with endive. I these days, I roast endive. Just throw it in a pan, salt, pepper, drizzled with olive oil. I cut them in half, cut side up. 450-degree oven, 20 minutes. They're fabulous. And you can serve them at room temperature. In fact, I prefer them at room temperature. The other thing is cantaloupe. Oh, the other two things I do with endive, I make a salad with it, and I put a little mustard in my oil, vinegar, salt, pepper, mustard. No herb necessary. And the other thing I do with it is I braise it. I put it in a skillet, same way I do fennel, by the way. I put it in a skillet with just enough water to barely cover it, and a glob of butter or glug of olive oil, and let it cook until all the liquid is evaporated and the vegetable is tender. It's very delicious. So the other thing I wanted to mention is, even though it sounds crazy, we have been getting great cantaloupes in the market. And I must say, in all of my markets, because they're coming from Guatemala. And I did a very little bit of research on this and discovered that the first cantaloupes from Guatemala came into the U.S. in mid-December. Hence, I now, in mid-January, am finding Guatemalan cantaloupes everywhere. And not only are they sweet and very finely textured, but they seem to be reliable. I've been buying them in different markets, all marked. They're all stamped, by the way, Guatemala. They all have a little sticker on them. Everybody in January is on a diet one way or another. Everybody's watching themselves at least. A cantaloupe is very low in calories, very low in carbohydrates. It's really a great fruit. So, but the thing is, in the middle of the winter, you don't think of eating cantaloupe. It's a summer fruit. And I wouldn't, you know, and I do from time to time try vegetables and fruits that are coming from South America because, of course, they have the opposite weather that we do. But they're not always wonderful. For instance, there are now asparagus in the market from Peru. Now, when they first started coming in a number of years ago, they were horrible. Now they're just boring. But I really, had you ever meet an asparagus that doesn't make your pee smell?
No.
Peruvian asparagus. They somehow have, I guess, hybridized them so that, you know, I usually, I don't dread, but I'm forewarned with when I eat asparagus. But nowadays, no, not with these asparagus. I'm stuck in the house here.
You mentioned cantaloupe, and I always remember my days going to the Concord and going to a lot of restaurants and having the balled cantaloupes that they bought out with the little balls of cantaloupes.
Cantaloupe balls. What a waste of cantaloupe.
I loved them as a kid.
I remember balled. My mother used to make cantaloupe balls. My mother was very big. This all came back to me just the other day. My mother was very big on fruit displays. And the reason it came back to me is that on New Year's Eve, we ate, we played cards with friends, and we had some little snacks that called for toothpicks. So I hauled up these picks that my mother, that I inherited from my mother. They're little silver, little sterling silver wire picks, but at the end of each one is a different uncut gemstone. Really beautiful. Lapis, jade, anyway, very nice. So I remembered my mother used to use these for melon balls and other fruit displays. For instance, she was very big on cutting pineapple in a decorative way, and then she would put these very colorful picks in the middle for you to take the pineapple.
My days of eating out as a young kid with my dad, I used to love that stuff.
Well, listen, you grew up eating in the Catskills.
The Catskills? And in New York.
You know, and you were a kid like me who ate a lot.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we were probably like, oh, what's his name, the comic? Alan King. Alan King, who worked a lot in the Catskills. And there's an old joke about him. He would look at the menu at the Concord and he would say, okay, I'll have it.
Every time
eating everything on the menu.
Every time we get to the Concord for my father to play, when we had a long ride and we got there, he had them waiting in the kids' room, ice cream and sprinkles.
What's become of the Concord? I know the golf course, I think, is still open.
The golf course is there, but the rest of it's gone. It was what an amazing place when it was up, though. What an amazing
place. Buildings gone?
Oh, yeah, most of them. Yeah.
I have postcard photographs of all the Concord buildings, the dining room, table setting.
Oh, they had shopping centers. They had everything. It was unbelievable.
Well, not in my day. That came later, I think.
Oh my gosh.
My mother did not like the Concord, and she didn't really want to go. She went from time to time, but only because her friends, she said it was way too big for her. I think she preferred the Neville.
Yeah, probably. But the Concord was a city. It was a city.
Yeah, it was too big.
They had a pool so big, Eartha Kitt was there one day, and she had a cat with her, a wild cat. I'm not talking about her. And the cat attacked somebody. And you know what they did? They threw the person that the cat attacked out and let Eartha Kitt stay.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah, Eartha Kitt used to live in our part of the world.
I
used to bump into her in West Cornwall.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was interesting. I bumped into her West Cornwall several times, and we talked. And then I bumped into her in Manhattan, and she wouldn't talk to me.
That's right. Damn New York.
In my elevator, in my own building.
All right, Arthur, I'll speak to you next week.
All right, I'm going to go make sauerkraut soup.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven this morning here on Robin Hood Radio. You can also find him on our website, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand, click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, and that's exactly what you'll get. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.